Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
Merriam-Webster defines strategy as a careful plan or method for achieving a particular goal, usually over a long period of time. Healthcare, both on the patient level and on the systemic level, benefits from strategic thinking. My guest today has deep interest and knowledge when it comes to the topic of strategic thinking. Prepare to improve your skills. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Dr. Michael Gardner. Dr. Gardner is Vice President, Administrator of Women's and Children's Hospital at University Health in San Antonio, Texas. He is board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, as well as maternal fetal medicine. Dr. Gardner is a certified physician executive, and in 2025, he became a fellow of the American Association for Physician Leadership, the sponsor of this podcast. Dr. Gardner, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you. I'm really thrilled to be here.
It is our absolute pleasure to have you. We could start with you describing your pathway to becoming a physician leader.
Well, I'll try to make it as brief as possible. I grew up mainly in El Paso, Texas. My father was Army, but that's where we grew up. Nobody in my family was physicians. Like many people, felt called to do medicine, went to medical school and residency, and to pay for that, since my family was not of means, had an Air Force scholarship, paid back my time to the Air Force. And when I got out, I went to University of Alabama at Birmingham, which at the time was one of the best fellowships in maternal fetal medicine. It had nothing to do with me, except that I had contacts from my Air Force days. I was able to get in. And they were kind enough, even at that point, I guess because of my time in the military and things, I had an interest in how things worked on a system level, as well as how things worked on an individual case-by-case patient level. And they were kind enough to let me and pay for it. My master's of public health and health policy, which I did. And then at my first faculty job, then I was recruited to Houston when I was at Baylor and was asked to be the director of quality for the public hospital system, Paris Health, and did that. And that was a four-year process and led joint commission surveys. And that was at the very beginning of the patient safety movement. And so did a lot of that. Then was recruited to be chief of OB-GYN and Grady in Atlanta, which is a great institution. Also worked with the system leadership there. And then became a chair of a department of OB-GYN, which obviously, then you're running a department, you're still doing clinical work, but you have a budget to worry about, you're recruiting, you have education responsibilities, research responsibilities. Did that for 7 years. And then we came back to Houston, where I was the executive vice president for ambulatory care at Harris Health. But this is the first time I wasn't working for a medical school. I was working for a system, ran about 45 clinics. I was CEO of a dialysis center, which is kind of funny for a maternal fetal medicine guy, but I learned a lot about dialysis. Had pharmacies, radiation oncology centers, those kinds of things. And learned a lot, and we got to do some really great things. And the last thing that I did there was with my team, we set up a clinic for right after Hurricane Harvey. For 3 weeks, we had a 24/7 clinic at the old Astrodome for 3,000 evacuees, men, women, children, we provided primary care, optometry, dental care, as well as any kind of sort of urgent care needs. And that was really a very rewarding experience. I became vice dean of clinical affairs. It was the one time I did a startup where I was the first vice dean for clinical affairs at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and did that for 5 years. And that was interesting. We saw a lot of growth, a lot of improvement. But any new school has a lot of changes when it comes to leadership. And then finally, I was recruited here to San Antonio. I knew the former CEO, who I've known for a long time, truly, and this is sort of a trite phrase, but he truly is and truly was a transformational leader. And we were opening a new women's and children's hospital that in 2 weeks will have been open for 2 years. I came about a year before we opened to help make that happen and open up our new facility. So that's the process. I've worked outpatient, inpatient, on the system side and on the medical school side. And I'd like to believe that the skill is in spite of all those different things, whether it's being a chair or being an EVP, it's about being a leader and trying to promote your team. And, you know, because, you know, the people, I've always been fortunate that the people I work with are A, very smart, and B, work really hard. And, you know, they accomplished a lot of things that make me look better than I probably deserve.
Well, I don't know about that. Today, we're going to be discussing strategic thinking. And before we get too far into the topic, I thought maybe you could help us with a definition of the term.
Well, if you Google it, ChatGPT or whatever is your mode of choice, you'll find multiple. So the one that we use, and when I say we, my partner and I will be rolling out here pretty soon with AAPL, a course on strategic thinking. And the one we use is strategic thinking can be understood as the ability to rationally analyze and navigate flexibly through critical situations, envisioning long-term goals, and develop stepwise plans to achieve those goals with an agile and a dynamic mindset. Now, that's a very long definition, but I think it's comprehensive. And the word that, if people want to remember one word, I think that the key word about strategic thinking is it involves and probably requires becoming comfortable with foresight and thinking the ability to try to see that mountain range in front of us, but maybe even more important, the mountain range behind it, and try to imagine what that would look like. And some people, I think, come by that easier than others, but I think all of us can improve that skill. I think all of us can learn that skill as a contrast, you know, perhaps with clinical thinking, which is a little bit different.
How'd you become interested in the topic?
I think it's sort of epistemology, right? You started thinking about the thinking, because in all these leadership roles, you're doing strategic thinking, assuming you're doing your leadership roles correctly. You by definition must be thinking about, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now. But you might not put a word on it because, well, yeah, of course, if we do this, you know, our goal would be if we decide to open this ambulatory surgery center in that part of town, that you know, that's going to A, bring in some market share, but also it might take some of the excess burden off our main ORs where we're having difficulty getting all of our surgeons in. So we would see that we make this investment by year three, year four, this is how it would return, and this is how that would help the system, plus in helping our brand in the community, because if we provide a high quality ambulatory surgery center, that's just going to bring us goodwill for the entire system. Well, that's strategic thinking, right? And you might not even think to call it strategic thinking, but there is a skill set that sort of trite idea of chess versus checkers kind of thing, that, you know, trying to plan two or three moves in advance. And people who teach strategy and strategic thinking point out that chess is actually a very good way of exercising your brain to develop some of those things, to try to envision what those moves might be and what the consequences of your next move would be. So I think it's just doing it over the years and realizing, well, you have this interest, you being me, have this interest in how systems work and thinking beyond more than just bedside clinical care, which I still do some. And why is that? What is it about that attracts you? And that's the sort of the joy of strategic thinking, to look at some possibilities and to get around some really smart people and make some plans and hopefully be able to stick around long enough to actually see some of those plans come to fruition.
Maybe it should be, but it's not entirely clear to me why physicians need strategic thinking. Can you help me with that?
Well, and obviously I'm prejudiced as a physician leader and a loyal member of AAPL. There's a in my mind, a canard by some of my non-physician administrative friends, that, you know, doctors do clinical thinking and other people, the other executives do strategic thinking. They are different, but they're not mutually exclusive. You know, as in so many people point out, and is a much better word than or. You can do, if you're smart enough to get through medical school, residency, perhaps fellowship, do the things you can do, you can be smart enough to do clinical thinking when you're doing clinical work. And there are some differences, and we can discuss that. And do strategic thinking when you're looking at leadership. Now, some docs will say, you know, that's not my thing. I love just being at the bedside. That's all I want to think about. I'll let other people worry about those things. But I think more and more, we as a profession are realizing that if we want to move American medicine forward, I don't think anybody is out there saying that, oh, we have the very best healthcare for the cheapest price that's delivered incredibly quickly. I think all of us would agree that, you know, 20%, you know, give or take a few percentage, 20% of GDP compared to other countries, you know, is probably not sustainable in the long term, particularly when you look at what that the impact of that is on federal and state budgets. There's a lot of conversation right now about. And two, when you look at all the different healthcare measures, you know, I'll pick on my specialty. When we look at preterm birth in the United States compared to other other countries, we still have a ways to go. We spend more and we get less. Well, I would argue that to fix those problems, it can't only be physicians at the table, but physicians should not exclude themselves from the table and should not be allow themselves to be excluded from the table, because we have a perspective that I think is absolutely essential to moving medicine forward, moving American medicine healthcare forward.
Let's drill down a little bit more into the difference between and similarities between clinical thinking and strategic thinking.
Well, I'll give you a few examples. So just to focus, when you're in clinical thinking, you're thinking about immediate patient care and the clinical outcomes, right? You're looking at that patient, what she, you know, is presenting with, what are her complaints, what are her labs show, what are her ultrasounds or her x-rays or other studies show, and you're trying to figure out what's going on and trying to improve, you know, her outcomes, if possible, cure whatever is ailing her, or if not, at least improve her condition, you know, as soon as possible. Well, from a strategic thinking, you're thinking of long-term goals and organizational growth and organizational strategy and tactics to move forward to achieve those goals. You know, with the key skills, you know, from a clinical point of view, you need critical thinking. You need to be able to problem solve. You obviously have to have medical knowledge. You have to have that training. And you have to be willing, you know, you have to be really particular to pay attention to the detail, because if you don't, you can miss that lab value that, you know, that perhaps you didn't expect to be abnormal and usually wouldn't be abnormal, but is an exception for this particular patient, or, you know, miss something on an imaging, or you have to listen carefully and be able to take a good history and figure out, is there something in the patient's presenting complaints that make this person unusual? You know, on the other hand, strategic thinking, you're thinking more broadly. You're looking at the internal environment. And when I mean the internal environment, your organization, you know, whether that's your multi-specialty clinic, whether that's your hospital, whether that's your, you know, 10 hospital system, whatever your internal environment is. And then likewise, there's the external environment. Let's go back to you're part of a small multi-specialty group. Well, your external environment is the community you work in, the state that you work in, and whatever state laws may be happening. And clearly there's some challenges happening that really vary from state to state right now. And of course, you know, as we sit here in late 2025, you know, there's obviously a lot of questions about what's going on with some of the recent federal legislation and the impact that's going to have on healthcare and on patients, on hospitals, on physicians, and as far as reimbursement and those things. So you have to have that wider view, which changes your primary goal. I mean, again, for clinical thinking, We hope that we're providing high quality evidence-based patient care for that patient. The strategic thinking, our hope would be that we're achieving sustainable success and competitive advantage. So the skills, the critical thinking, the problem solving, clinical thinking with a narrow focus. The key skills for strategic thinking is analytical thinking, decision making, and again, I come back to that word foresight. One of the things about foresight that can be difficult when physicians are beginning this is that in clinical thinking, generally the facts are the facts and we can see them. There could be some mysteries, but there's foresight by definition is a prediction, and it's not a 99.9% prediction. It's a depending on how far out you're looking and depending on what you're discussing, you may be happy if you got an 80% chance of being right. And that can be uncomfortable, at least initially, for people who are used to dealing in certain certitudes. And there is some ambiguity when you're doing strategic thinking, because the example I always use is, and we're not talking about strategic planning, although we have some courses coming about that. I'll give a cheap plug. But everybody that I knew had a strategic plan in 2019, and not one of them had the word COVID in it. Right. So you could have had been the best foresight gifted, leader in 2018 in the world, and you wouldn't have probably said, in 2 years, we're going to be dealing with this pandemic. Now, some people with foresight said someday we'll be dealing with a pandemic, not knowing to prepare for that, we need to be able to do these things and mobilize these forces and set up these structures. And there were people that had that foresight about dealing with a pandemic. And part of strategic thinking is saying, okay, we have a new hand of cards here. We have three COVIDs kind of thing in our hand. Now let's change our strategic thinking about how do we deal with this pandemic for the foreseeable future and how we're going to approach that.
Can strategic thinking be taught, or is this something that people have or not?
I absolutely do think it can be taught. I do think some people come to it more naturally for whatever reason. I do also think that it's something you get better at with practice. I think it can be mentored, and it can be, people can show you examples of that and you can learn from senior people. I also think that for physicians in particular, as you go through the leadership journey, typically, you become, you get asked to be on a credentials committee, or you get asked to be a department head, or your multi-specialty group asked you to run this particular clinic that's going to be opening soon, and you need to, or we need to institute some new guidelines or whatever. And so you can start with smaller problems and work with a group of people on a smaller problem. Let's say it's in a clinic, we have a problem getting patients into our rheumatology clinic, and you're a rheumatologist, and you're going to work with your staff and say, all right, this is how we do our referrals, this is how we deal with our prior auths, this is how we get people in, this is how we get them out, how we get the information back to their primary care doctors. With that, smaller projects, one become, comes experience, knowledge. You can, have some positives and probably make some mistakes, but it also builds confidence. And that confidence shows, and usually, one of the things that typically happens if you're someone that wants to do these kinds of things, typically people will, at least initially, because you're doing it essentially for free, they'll dump more on you. And if you get the taste for that, those are the people I think that often reach out to do courses with AAPL. Often, we now have our new Chief Medical Officer Academy and those kinds of things, and start thinking of those bigger jobs, whether that's outpatient, inpatient, hospital, system level, and it grows. And I do think that you can improve your skills. That said, I think you can also continually learn. I read strategy stuff and strategic thinking and leadership books. I read all kinds of other things too, but not hoping not to be a one-trick pony, but I do think that you could continue to educate yourself and learn. I've been playing around with ChatGPT lately, which is, I've been fascinated playing with it. I mean, a new skill for me, and not one that's required for my job, but just because, I want to be able to speak the language and be able to have intelligent conversations. And on that point, I will say one thing too. As people become physician leaders, one of the real tricks of that is, we speak clinician, we speak medicine, and we get respect for that from our administrative friends. We also need to learn, we don't have to be able to do finances as well as our CFO. We don't have to know logistics as well as our chief operating officer, but we have to know enough that we can speak the language that when they say something, we understand them, and that we can speak in their language back to them. And that's where the physician leader can really leverage all of their experience, right? Because then they can also go back to the medical staff and be, for lack of a better word, a translator. When our chief financial officer is talking about these things, what she's trying to say is this, and this is why it matters to you, and how it affects your patients, how it affects your staff, and frankly, how it affects your family because it affects your paycheck.
Are there certain personalities or specialties in medicine that are more predisposed to strategic thinking than others?
I don't think any specialty is precluded. A lot of people would be surprised at OB-GYN and an MFM, but there are, many maternal fetal medicine people who do similar things. I do think that specialties that tend to naturally, I think they're overrepresented. Emergency medicine, internal medicine, hospitalists, primary care, family medicine. The first two, particularly for hospital kinds of jobs, because the emergency doc is in the hospital all the time, the hospitalist is in the hospital all the time. So they see, they wind up interacting with a lot of people of a lot of different job descriptions, a lot of different specialties in physicians, but also different nursing, case management, housekeeping, dietary. They wind up interacting with a lot of pharmacy, different people. So I think on the inpatient side, those two specialties, at least in the last, 10, 20 years, in my mind, they seem to be overrepresented. Primary care, particularly family medicine, I think oftentimes winds up doing, will wind up doing some physician leadership roles in an outpatient setting. For example, FQHCs or federally qualified health centers, places like that, where because they have a wide breadth, they understand what's going on, since they live in the clinics, they understand how the clinic the operations work. That said, I mean, I think that you can pick the most esoteric specialty you can think of. There are I've met physician leaders in all those specialties.
Well, that's I think that's encouraging to members of our audience today, right? That no one is precluded from moving down this path. You mentioned in passing learning about and working with ChatGPT. I'm interested in your thoughts on how AI will impact strategic thinking for physicians.
Well, I think it's going to allow people reading and talking to people, how AI is both exciting and terrifying people in the consulting industry, right? Because what AI can do is what generally, traditionally, graduates right out of college used to do. A lot of the data research, a lot of the data mining, putting together reports, to give to the more senior partners to make the presentations, right? But a lot of the grunt work was done by people right out of college. Well, I think more and more firms are realizing that the AI can do a lot of that work faster, and obviously cheaper because you're not paying them. And then you need, instead of maybe, let's say, six people working on a project gathering data, maybe you need one or two people to double check and to confirm the stuff coming out, because sometimes, you know, AI still gets it wrong. So it's like you could just take it on faith, as some people have found out to their detriment by, you know, relying on it and turning it into court proceedings or whatever, as the case may be in your profession. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can imagine large law firms saying, we used to hire, you know, 12 associates a year. Now we're going to hire three associates a year. And those three are going to check to make sure that the stuff coming out of AI is accurate and double check the references, which is obviously faster double checking a reference than it is finding the reference to begin with and doing, so I do think that that's where, for strategic thinking, it'll be helpful that you can put in some scenarios and it can run some scenarios. I don't think that that replaces strategic thinking. I think it's a tool, and I always, you know, tools are great. I use the example that, you know, my father wanted to make sure that I understood blue collar work. You know, you used to have me put in post holes with large railroad ties when we had a very small little farm outside of El Paso. And so in the summer, he'd give me the post hole diggers and I could put in railroad ties. I think his thought was it would perhaps lead me to a different kind of work. And I guess my parents are long gone, but I guess he was prophetic. But, you know,
there's mission accomplished.
and then the second part of that is my very first job when I was 14 was working at a horse stable. So I used a shovel for something else. In fact, I joke that some days my job hasn't changed. I just get paid a lot more than I used to. But you know, the tools are tools, and you need different kinds of shovels for different kind of work. And it is also true that in the history of man, someone has taken a tool, the shovel, and used it as a homicidal weapon. That doesn't mean the shovel's fault, right? I think AI is a tool. I think it's a really impressive tool, but it's up to us to make sure that we use it for good as intended and not for evil or homicidal tendencies. So I do think that for strategic thinking, it's going to be helpful. I don't think it should, but I think it would be a very foolish leader, physician or otherwise, who would say, you know, I have this organization that has, you know, we have 13,000 employees, and we're, I think, a $2.5 billion budget this year. AI, you know, the gods of AI, tell me what to do for the next 5 years of my, you know, and I'll just do whatever you tell me to. I think that would be a very foolish leader. You know, but if you can ask specific questions, you know, tell me what you think about the market forces in this particular part of our market area when it comes to interventional radiology, I think that, you know, then that could be, they can gather some data that then you can double check.
Fascinating. Well, as our time together grows to an end, Dr. Garner, I want to hear more about the course that you're developing with AAPL and things that AAPL is doing that you know of as a fellow. Maybe we can talk a little bit about what we should be expecting from you and our friends at AAPL in the future.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to start the future with the past. So I've been involved with AAPL since 1997 when I went to the first Physicians and Management course when it was still the American College of Physician Executives. It really was when one of my boss at the time said, you know, you have real leadership potential, you need some training. And she sent me to this course. And I'm forever grateful for that. I think that a lot of us have done the courses over the years. Because of them, the University of Southern California used to have the master's medical management, and I was part of that program. That was part of my leading to my certified physician executive. And I still have friends from that cohort that, you know, I'm still close to, and we graduated 11 years ago. Saw one just recently at the AAMC meeting. now I really think that in the last year or so, APL is making a real shift. I think a positive shift with some of these things like the micro-credentials, the CMO Academy, the CEO Academy, that if I was a little bit younger, I might actually do myself. I think that there's just really a lot of opportunity for people to come and pick a group if there's still a very definite place for people just starting their journey, no question. And then that builds. I've been a part of the Vanguard group, which is for more senior executives. We have some really great discussions. You know, we meet annually, learn a ton every time I go from the speakers, but also probably just as much from the people in the audience who are peers. Our courses, and I say our because my partner is Dr. Mark Guagnoli. He's a PhD at University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He's the Senior Associate Dean for Faculty Affairs. And Mark has two PhDs, one in sports performance and one in neurosciences. He's also he's an executive coach and has a consulting business. And he's well known for his golf, his mental aspects of golf. He's golf coach for the UNLV golf team, as well as several PGA pros. And he's obviously much, much better at golf than I am, although he tolerates and plays with me occasionally. So Mark and I, we've worked together for years, and we did some strategic plans and stuff for UNLV when the school opened. So we did this, and using what I hope I bring to the table, my history as physician leader and being a clinician, with Mark's history of being nationally recognized in cognitive science and performance science learning, how to improve. We tried to combine those approaches. So our first course is on strategic thinking. That's an online course. The second one will come right afterwards, which is on called the who, what, where, and when of strategic planning, where we go over the concepts of strategic planning. And our hope is that people will do those two courses and then join us in 2026 for a hybrid course where we will as opposed to the hybrid courses of the past where they met for an hour, you did online work, and they met for an hour at the end. We're going to meet hourly or even more than hourly every week. And we're going to walk people through the different steps of how to do a strategic plan. So a mini strategic plan, not a 300 page, but so the people taking the course will actually end with a 20 page strategic plan that either A is, you know, about a problem that they actually are dealing with where they're working, or they can make a mythical organization that, you know, this is my dream and I want to think about my dream, my entrepreneurial dream, my strategic plan, and hopefully walk people through that and give them feedback and help them do that. So those are the things that we'll be working on, have been working on, and will be coming out in the next several months.
Very exciting. My guest has been Michael Garner. Dr. Garner, thank you so much for having been on Sound Practice.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
My thanks to Michael Gardner. Dr. Gardner's actions have made him a true physician leader. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday. Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom. You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Batman and Robin, Whitman Kapow.